Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
Have you lost your mind? I mean, how is it that you can disrespect a man's ethnicity when you know we've influenced nearly every facet of white America, from our music to our style of dress, not to mention your basic imitation of our sense of cool, walk, talk, dress, mannerisms? We enrich your very existence, all the while contributing to the gross national product through our achievements in corporate America. It's these conceits that comfort me when I'm faced with the ignorant, cowardly, bitter, and bigoted who have no talent, no guts. People like you who desecrate things they don't understand when the truth is you should say, thank you, man, and go on about your way. But apparently, you're incapable of doing that. So, and don't tell me to be cool. I am cool! Racial epithets. Why does it always come down to that? Huh?
It's 1 minute after the hour. You know your time. I don't need to tell you. You're not looking at the clock anyway. None of you do at this time. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on blogtalkradio.com. It is July the 10th, 2012. Just three days from my biological son's birthday. Now, you're going to ask me, why the heck do you refer to him as your biological son? Because I got kids everywhere. Somehow they've become a part of my life. I got two stepchildren. Don't really talk to them anymore. But, you know, I've been raising children everywhere. That's what I do. I learn them. I raise them up. I take them out of their squalor. And I turn them into men and young women. And the way I do that is by teaching them the values of this world. So you know who you are. Brandon, Bradley, Ethan, you know who you are. Most of you get your values from me. You know you do. But in the words of Forrest Gump, that's all I have to say about that. We've got plenty of issues to talk about today. Everything is on the board. Let's talk about the most important issue. Most important issue today. I have to talk about it. I can't avoid it. I have to mention it. I've quit my job due to illegal activity. Can't do it. You can't work on a job where people are behaving in an illegal way. You can't do it. I won't do it. I won't surround myself with people who perform illegal acts on the job, in the workplace, and put my life and my safety in danger. Can't do it. Now, what I find incredibly funny is that the people that I work with, they always want to criticize me for criticizing the Negro. You be putting down the Negroes. I think you got a problem with black people. And then I get around you and you act as unprofessional as you have. Putting yourselves and my life, which is more important than yours. Sorry, that's the facts. I have a future. Your life is minuscule. It means nothing. If you will perform illegal activities on your job while you are working, your life means nothing. Pleh, spit, means nothing. And why does your life mean nothing? Because you will put it at risk. And I will not tolerate that. I have a future. I'm about to be 43 years old, and I am not like most typical Negroes who stand around thinking that their life is squat, that their life is spit. I have a future. I have a committed future to be better than you and better than everybody around you. Now, does that make you less of a man? Probably, but that's for you to decide. Am I too uppity? Am I too stuck up? Probably, but who gives a damn? It's who I am. A woman said the other day at dinner, I have to bring this up. A woman said the other day, a white woman said, that I want to be white. Now, under any other circumstances, if I was some ignorant Negro, I would have taken that personally. But I never have. Never have. I've been dealing with that since I was 10 years old. People say it all the time. Was it an ignorant statement? Probably. But I know that's the way people comfort themselves with the way that I behave, because they don't expect a Negro to behave the way that I behave. They want me to act niggerific. And I refuse. I will not, yo, 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 baby mama, I'm be down, I'm hollering at your boy. I'm not that type. I'm just not. So that is the reason why I had to officially quit this job, because, okay, I'm going to tell you a personal story here. I got to tell you a personal story. So one of the individuals at my place of work, who's a good guy and I like him, he's a real good guy. I like him. He and I banter back and forth each other, and I'm going to miss this guy because I love ragging with him. Ragging on him, he rags on me. We have a little bit of fun. We've got such a relationship that I would even equate it on the job that we are sort of like the Abbott and Costello. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the Rowan and Martin of the job, because we banter back and forth. And people like when we jar back and forth at each other because we don't take offense at it, but we, you know, we like ripping each other. So he just got out of a bad situation, and the guys wanted to celebrate. And the way they wanted to celebrate was by doing drugs. And one person who was in a position of power was pretty much, I don't want to use the word threatened. It's an unfair word. He was pushing me into doing something that I would not do. And he said, oh, man, you, that's over? You done with that? You know what I'm saying? We got to celebrate. You know, we getting such and such tonight. I'm not, I mean, you can make up your own minds about what I'm talking about. But, you know, they wanted to celebrate doing illegal activity. And I said, oh, you know, okay, that's cool. You know, we want to celebrate this man's situation all night because I like the guy. But they turn around, look at me and say, you down? Is that? I think that's what the brothers say. You down? I said, no, I don't want to take any part of that. But you know what? I understand. You know what I'm saying? You guys are going to celebrate. You know, I want to celebrate with this. Maybe, you know, maybe we'll go out and go have a beer. You know, I'd love to go buy him a beer and, you know, say thank you. I'm glad your situation is done with. I love you, bro. You're a good, cool dude. But then the person turns around and says, what you mean, no? You going to do that tonight? I'm 42 years old. You're not going to tell me what it is that I'm going to do. My mama don't tell me what to do. I just put that little black. My mama don't tell me what to do. No, but I couldn't believe it. And the behavior was just so crazy and just kept bringing it up. And then trying to play me like I'm a clown because I don't want to do it. Like I was in high school again. And I'm saying to myself, listen to me. There's a thing in my life called conviction. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm not going to be a part of that. And I don't care about what ridicule you give me. I don't care about the names that you call me. Because all the names that you can throw at me, I won't get offended. I can throw worse at you. Trust me, the tongue is sharp. It's a dagger, my friend. And you're not going to make me do something I don't want to do. But I was stunned at that. But then the part that bothered me even more, the part that bothered me more than anything was that to see certain individuals actually partaking in this activity while we were on the job. And that is where I had a bigger issue. Because of my personal situation, I don't need that baggage. So I had to resign. I just can't do it. And I know times are hard. I know the environment, the economy is tough. But, you know, I'll flip burgers. I'll make a taco for your ass if I have to in order to keep my ass afloat. But I will not, I repeat, will not. I will not jeopardize my way of life and my situation just because you have no personal respect for yourself. I have a future. My future means more to me than anything. And yeah, paychecks come and go. Paychecks always come and go. But your conviction is what makes you a man. You stand by what it is that you believe, regardless. You stand by what it is that you believe. And you do what you have to do. But you never, ever jeopardize your life. You never jeopardize your family. You never jeopardize what is truly unique to you by the mistakes or the irresponsibility of others. I can't do it. And it's tough for me to say that because I genuinely like people there, but you know what? My fondness of you cannot supersede who it is that I am as a man and what it is that or what it is that I'm willing to do for myself. I cannot compromise my principles. I just won't. And I'm angered by it. I'm hurt by it. But I can't make anybody change their mind. I'm not going to change the conditions of what anybody else do. See, I'm in the business. This is what makes me a conservative. This is what makes me a true conservative, is that I will not tell you what to do with your life. Because if I don't do something, I will not tell you that you're no longer allowed to do it. Liberals do that. Everybody's overweight. You can't have a Big Gulp. Everybody's overweight. You can't have a Big Mac. Everybody's overweight. You've got to eat asparagus. That's what liberals do. Conservatives live a conservative way and let others make their decisions for their own, because that is the definition of freedom, ladies and gentlemen. And I believe in freedom, and I will freely allow you to do whatever it is you do, no matter how damaging it may be in your life. But I will never, ever criticize you or subject you to living my way of life in order to advance an agenda. In order to appreciate freedom, I must appreciate yours. And that's why I made the decision to move on. And I'm having a tough time doing that because I don't know if people can understand that. I know how some people may take that. But I am a professional. No matter what it is that I'm doing. And that's from shoveling shit to building a corporate building, to running a corporate office, to shoveling manure. I do my job with dignity. I do my job with respect. And I do my job professionally. It's who I am. It's who I will always be. So I hope that people can respect that. I have a future. And I'll protect that future for me and my loved ones, the people who are around me, because I've got a higher calling. I have more people to answer to than you could understand. I have people who depend on me and respect me and want me to be somebody, and I can never, ever let them down. And I'll tell you a brief story before we go to break, just to break this down. When I was homeless, when I was 15 years old, maybe about 16, a drug dealer on 195th Street and Jamaica Avenue, never forget it, He saw me sleeping on a staircase in his building. And he would put $20 in my pocket every day because he knew I didn't have any money. Even though I was packing groceries across the street at the local Key Food, he would put $20 in my pocket because he knew I was struggling. One day I'm walking back to his building to go sleep on a stairway that he knew I was going to sleep on. He stopped his car, picked me up. We drove back to the apartment building that he knew I was going to sleep in the staircase. And he said to me, "Reese, I can't have you sleeping on a staircase anymore. I can't live with it." And that was a nice thing for him to feel and to think. He said, "I can't deal with coming up those steps and watching you sleeping on that staircase." He goes, "I want to offer you a job. I want you to be a lookout at one of my drug spots. You have an apartment on 212th Street and Jamaica Avenue in Hollis, Queens. You don't have to sell any drugs, Reese. Just be the lookout. Just watch out for the cops. I'll give you $300 a week." This is 1986. "I'll give you $300 a week, tax-free." He said, "Think about it and let me know." The next day I said to him no. And the reason why I said to him no was that the reason why I was homeless was because my mother kicked me out for accusing me, or my sister for that matter, accused me of stealing $20 from my mom that I never ever stole, because I don't thieve anybody. I'm not a thief. But because my mom said that I stole $20 from her, kicked me out, and I was living 3 years homeless. And here was somebody giving me an opportunity to make $300 a week just looking up for police. I didn't have to sell a drug. I said no. And he asked me why. And I said, "Because I can't have my mother find out I work for a drug dealer. Because I cannot defame my mother's name. I never want anybody telling my mother that her son is a drug dealer. It would break her heart." Now, this isn't to say that I don't have other siblings who've done that. I do. And that's not to say that my convictions are higher than theirs, because they probably are, because I don't need to promote that. But to me personally, no matter what my mother did in kicking me out, it was important to me to honor my mother's name and to become a success, that my mother had something to be proud of. Even though she didn't even want me living in her house, her name, her reputation meant more to me. I could have been bitter and said, "Go F yourself, Mom. I'm going to go out there and do whatever it is I got to do." That I could not. Because as much as I was angry about what she did, I didn't hate her enough to destroy her name. And those are where my convictions come from. From that one moment. I've talked about it hundreds of times. I've talked about it all the time. People have heard this story over and over again. But if you ever want to ask yourself, where does Reese get all of this from? Where does he get his conviction from? That is the one moment. Now, as a conservative, long before then, 6 years before when I was 10 years old. But conviction, that's different. You don't settle. I don't use the word belief when it comes to that thing, and Mary will be the first person to admit that I always use one line. Belief is for people who lack knowledge. Think about that. Belief is for people who lack knowledge. What I believe, quote unquote, is what I know for a fact. So I don't have any beliefs. I know. I know I made the right decision when I was 16 years old. I know that the way that I am is the way to go. I know it. I know it. I don't believe it. Beliefs can be changed through influence. If you don't know what it is that you're talking about, what's the sense of speaking in the first place? So I did all that to just bring, I guess, some clarity to what it is that I'm going through today. Don't let anybody tell you different. I may sound a little like I got some agita in me. But I just want to let everybody know that today is actually a very joyful day for me. I'm not going to tell you yet. I promise you I will. Stick around, because I'm certain in the next 20 days, I'm probably going to make the biggest announcement of my life to the rest of the world, and I'm saving this for good reason, because I really, really think that it should be done in a very special way. It's just who I am, and deal with it. Don't text me. Don't email me. What are you talking about, Reese? Don't do it, because I'm not going to tell you. Just wait. Everything I do is a big announcement. Everything. When I moved to the D.C. area, it was a big announcement. You all freaked out. You all freaked out. When I told you I was going to do this show, you all freaked out. It was a big announcement. Just to let the rest of you know, I know you're listening. I know you're listening. We'll take a break. We got plenty of news today. I promise you. We have plenty of news. I just had to tell that personal story. I want to thank Mike. What's his girlfriend's name?
Who?
His girlfriend.
Mike. Oh, his wife.
Oh, is that his wife?
Yeah. Well,
I thought it was his girlfriend.
I think it's his wife. What? I don't know. Wait.
You know her name. Come on.
Her name is Erica.
Erica. Right?
Yes.
It is. Mike and Erica. I want to give them, I cannot believe that I'm actually throwing out a shout out. The shout out is actually dead, but I guess I'm going to acknowledge them. Mike and Erica, I send my best to you. By the way, Mike, if you get that Buick LaCrosse before me, you and me got problems. Okay? I get that LaCrosse before you. I know you're probably going to buy it real soon. You know what I'm saying? Because you're making those moves out there. But don't you dare get that LaCrosse before me. I want to be riding around town. I want to give you the first ride before you give me the first ride. Just letting you know. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio. And you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the Radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we continue. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. It's going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we're going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
Beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh,
yes. You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve, and it's called 211 for that matter, is that the police code 211 means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknight, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
how you
doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
But our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong.
3 years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back. My headphones are not working, and I'm ticked off 29 minutes after the hour on July the 10th, 2012. By the way, Mike is listening. He's in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and I know he's listening now. So I promised him that I would clear up something that I got wrong. He apparently you knew before I did that he and his
wife, Erica, are indeed married. And I apologize, Erica, if you're listening. Mike made you an honest woman, and that's a good thing. It's nice to see the brother man marrying his fine black and white woman. Yes, he's of mixed race, you know? But hey, we can accept Barack Obama, we can accept Erica, can't we? No, I'm kidding. Yes, they are indeed married. Mike, by the way, that information that I just sent you, that you gave me that quick little text about, keep it under wraps. Keep it under wraps. Don't say nothing. Keep it under wraps. It's just between you and I. Private little thing we just discussed. Anyway. All right. Plenty of news today. It's racism all the time on Reese on the Radio. Racism. Racism. It's what this show is built on. Racist. I have to tell you the truth, ladies and gentlemen, that nothing makes me feel better than proving that I am right. Nothing. Nothing makes me feel better than to be right. Because I'm always right. I am. Right now, my number is peaking over 85% of the time I am right. That, Mary, come on, dispute it. Dispute it, Mary, why you bugging? Dispute it. I've been right a lot over the past couple of months since we started the show. Since January 3rd, have I been right more often than not? Come on, break it down.
You weren't right about who's going to the Super Bowl.
Okay, I wasn't right about that.
You weren't right about any of the bets we made on any football games in the playoffs.
But hold on. If margin of error here, let's break it down. How many times, when it came to regular news,
I predicted it before it happened? You weren't right about the Trayvon Martin, what Trayvon Martin was using those donated funds for.
You mean George Zimmerman?
George Zimmerman.
Okay, I got that wrong.
All
right, I lost a couple points for that.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so wait. But haven't I been right a lot?
You have been able to predict or foresee some things coming, and I will give that to your ability.
But wait a minute, more often than I'm wrong?
More often than none. I will give you that.
So what are you going to give me? Give me a rating, because I say I'm at 85% right now.
I say you're probably at about 78, 80.
I'll take that. In fact, we'll let you predict that.
Okay.
We'll let you predict it from now on. If you're giving me 78, 80, I will drop my 85 down to your 78. And let's make it fair. Right?
Okay.
Now, I love racists. I love racists of all kinds. Folks, you do not know, Reese on the Radio, if you do not know that Reese loves racist.
And not because Reese is a racist, because he's not. He loves it because it's comedic to him.
It's hilarious. I love watching racists in action, because when they say stuff that's racist, it's ridiculous. And I'm sorry, one of my heroes is an admitted racist. One of my heroes.
Well, you can't say he's
an
admitted racist.
Yes, he is. Listen to this audio. He is an admitted racist.
No.
Now, you're going to ask yourself, who's Reese's hero other than Ronald Reagan? Ronald Reagan is my grandpapa. He is not my hero. He's my grandpapa. He's pop. But James Earl Jones, the voice of Darth Vader. And if anybody out there knows Reese on the Radio, they know I love Darth Vader. Darth Vader. He is my father. Yes, he is. I love the dark side because I am the dark side. But listen to the famous voice of James Earl Jones. Oh, man. Admitting that he grew up a racist. Listen to his own words. He says it himself. James Earl Jones, voice of Darth Vader.
Are you a political person, though? You might not be an activist, but are you a political junkie? Are you a political person in any way?
I listen as much as I can. I'm always on MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get enough of it.
Can't get enough of MSNBC. Left-leaning network. Oh, but listen to his voice. Tell me he doesn't sound like Darth. He's so Darth.
I even venture into the right-wing talk show sometimes.
So sometimes you turn to Fox then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, nothing wrong with that. You want to find out why people are wrong as well as right. You know what I mean?
Knowledge is all over the place.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can learn from anybody, yeah, any perspective in that sense. Absolutely.
I think I figured out the Tea Party. I think I do understand racism because I was taught to be one.
Did you hear that? He was taught to be a racist.
By my grandmother. My grandmother was part Cherokee Indian, part black. She hated everybody. And she taught all of her children and grandchildren to be racist, to hate white people, and to distrust black people.
She was like her old kind.
She did.
He said she was a racist. She hated everybody.
How can you be a racist
and hate
everybody?
She wasn't a racist. She was an equalist.
She was a hateful person. But she was racist against everyone based upon their race, though.
She hated everybody.
No. If she didn't like them based upon their race, she is a racist. And she was part black, and she was part Indian, and she was a racist. Because trust me, I'm going to bring up a very, very important part. A important question.
Well, the fact that she says, hate all white people,
and distrust
your fellow kind, the black people.
That's right.
Who does she love?
Nobody.
Nobody at all.
But that allowed me to figure it out for myself.
Okay.
Part black, she hated everybody.
Mm.
She taught all of her children and grandchildren to be racist, to hate white people, and to distrust black people.
Who did she love then?
Nobody.
Nobody at all.
But that allowed me to figure it out for myself.
Oh.
And I think I know what racism is better than anybody who's ever been a racist.
And what beginning? How did you turn out to be the decent, compassionate human being that you are?
Just thinking and observing.
Okay, now hold on. What James Earl Jones is telling us is very key, ladies and gentlemen. What James Earl Jones is telling us is that we can all become enlightened through racism. So, if you've got a racist pop, you can be like James Earl Jones and to learn to be a compassionate, loving man through racism. Racism taught him how to be compassionate and loving. So here's James Earl Jones, Darth Vader, goddammit, telling all of you that racism is good.
No, he is
like
not.
Like I've been telling you for years.
He is not. No, no.
Yes, he
no,
is.
No.
Racism is good. It is good.
Stop.
To hate your
Stop.
Fellow man based
Stop
on
it.
The color of his skin. Isn't he saying that?
No, he's not.
It's
no,
damn
not.
Good.
Come
he
on.
He's not saying
what
that.
What is he saying, Mary? What did
he's
you get
not,
from
oh,
that?
Stop yelling. He is saying that his grandmother was a racist.
And
therefore, by her being such a racist.
Through
and
that
obvious,
prism.
What, can I finish
but
without
through
you?
Through that prism.
Wait a minute.
Go on.
Let me slow down.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Pump the brakes.
All right.
Okay. What the man is trying to convey to the audience of normal people.
What? Go ahead.
Is that his grandmother, being of the Cherokee Indian and
well,
black,
else. He's
or okay,
Cherokee.
Whatever,
so,
some
well,
kind of
I couldn't
Indian
even hear the
and
word
black descent, to hate all white people, distrust black people, and then they go on to ask, who did she love? And
nobody.
Then he said, nobody.
Right.
So I don't know what nobody meant because, I mean, did she not love, she didn't love
she
a kid?
Found
she didn't
something.
Love, okay, let me finish.
Go
ahead, please.
I'm sorry. Don't filibuster now.
I'm
go
not
on.
Filibustering. The man is not saying that you can learn things through racism. What he's saying is that his experience in life and learning not to be racist.
He didn't suggest that.
Yes, he did.
He said that his grandmother
he
taught
went,
him how to be racist.
No, he didn't.
He says he knows everything about being racist through his grandmother, who taught all of her grandchildren to be racist.
And then he goes on to say that he went through life making observations and making his own decisions.
You're right. He challenged
her ideology. He challenged it. But what he's saying is that in essence, he is enlightened because of her racism. Her racism allowed him to challenge himself. Now, either James Earl Jones is suggesting that he's better than the rest of us, or that he can dissect racism better than the rest of us. Because, by the way, in this quote, he is saying the reason why he understands that the Tea Party is racist, because of his grandmother. He says he can identify racism better than anybody because of what his grandmother taught him. But here's a bigger question. Most black theologists, most black scholars say that blacks and minorities cannot be racist because they are a minority.
Well,
but
now,
I will tell you, I lived
in Alabama, and I will tell you right here and right now, everybody knows I have a thing for the chocolate man. And I was dating me a nice old chocolate man in Alabama, and his people were not with it. They were like, don't bring that white girl to this house.
Right, so they were racist.
And this was, you know, in 2000, when was
it? It was in the 90s.
They were not having it, though. They were not having it.
So I make my point extremely clear.
The whiteys didn't want it. The blacks didn't want it. I was shocked because I had never.
There can never be an argument made that blacks cannot be racist. But James Earl Jones is proving to me, I don't know about you, but to me, I hear James Earl Jones saying that he became an enlightened man due to his mother's or grandmother's racism. Let's take a call. Our number is 347-308-8701. Who do we have on the line with us in Ohio?
Yes, this is Brother Warren. I'm calling out of New Orleans.
Oh, you're in New Orleans. I apologize. Hey, what's up?
Hey, how are you? I was listening to your show. I just tuned in and saw your topic. And my position is that blacks cannot be racist. If there is black racism, where is the impact of black racism on the quality of lives of white people?
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. Let me answer it. We did a show, it couldn't have been, what, 2 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
Right, last week, in fact. We did a show where we were breaking down the violent crimes committed white on black versus black on white. And it turns out that the numbers were incredibly higher for blacks committing crimes on whites, and hate crime, they don't consider them hate crimes when they're committed, when blacks commit crimes on whites, but we know that they clearly are. If you take the case that happened in Hampton, Virginia, two newspaper reporters were attacked by 30 blacks, and after they were beaten up, someone made a claim about Trayvon Martin. There have been other cases where white men have been beaten, and there have been claims about Trayvon Martin. So if you want to look at the term racism, remember, if a white man beats up a black person and calls him a nigger, it's a racist attack. But if blacks attack a white person and scream out retribution for Trayvon Martin, isn't that racism as well?
No, that's not racism.
Then what is it? You call it justice?
The FBI statistics say that black people are the majority of victims of hate crimes.
That's absolutely untrue.
When we talk
let me stop them. Because the statistics that I'm reporting on is the FBI report. That was an FBI report that went as late as 2005. These are reports that went from 1973 to 2005. And the numbers are absolutely staggering that there are more African-American crimes against whites than whites against blacks. Although we hear more about white against black in the media, the numbers are staggeringly different when it goes the other way around. And those are FBI statistics.
Could you categorize those particular crimes? What are the categories of those crimes? And what are they classified as hate crimes with a basis for attacking them solely because they're white?
Interesting question. Here's why that's exactly – I'm glad you brought that up. The point is that it is far often that the police department will describe a crime where a white attacks a black as a hate crime more often than they will a black against a white. It's more often. In fact, in the case that we just cited in Hampton, Virginia, just recently, two white newspaper reporters attacked by blacks, 30 blacks. The original report said that it was a bias crime. The police department then changed the police report to suggest that it wasn't a bias crime because they did not want to create an hysteria where black people were being attacked. Even though reporters went down there and found out that blacks were saying, if you're white and you're not from around here, you will be attacked by blacks.
There's an old saying that says statistics don't lie, but liars lie about statistics.
Okay, all right. You know what? I'm going to give that to you. But are you suggesting in this day and age, that there are more blacks subjecting themselves, allowing themselves to be beaten, attacked, assaulted by whites in this day and age?
When we look at the issue of racism and what it entails, it's an institutional support system. No blacks own any financial institutions that are preventing whites from getting loans to buy homes.
So what?
No blacks are colluding on Wall Street.
So what?
To manipulate the home mortgage industry that disproportionate amount of blacks are
so
losing their home because of subprime mortgage.
No blacks are making any
rules and regulations.
You want to
anywhere
make that...
on the planet.
Sir, give me your name again. Give me your name again so I have it.
Pardon?
What's your name again? I apologize. I don't want to
Warren. Warren.
Okay, I'm sorry, Warren. Warren, let me break this down to you. Okay, you're bringing up the subprime mortgages, okay? All right, let's talk about the subprime mortgages. You want to believe that there's a racial disparity there? Well, let's explain how it happened. Now, if you want to ignore the fact that subprime mortgage loan debacle took place under the Clinton administration, a forced plan to get more poor African-American and minorities into their first home in December of 1999, and then threatened the mortgage companies and the banks by saying, if you do not give the home loans to these people, that we in the White House are going to use the White House press corps to deem you as racist, and the banks are forced to give these loans so they are not attacked by the White House. They give these
I see what you're saying. You're saying the people with power and influence are victims, and the people who are moneyless, disorganized, and powerless are the racist over those billionaires who have all the resources.
Banks
That's
did not,
interesting.
Warren, you're missing the point. Banks did not seek out people who couldn't pay for loans. You don't
you,
even. Wait. No.
The
banks
colluded.
Hear me out.
And the bank deceived.
Warren. Hear me
People.
Out. Warren, you got to hear me out. We're talking about a bank, and a bank's primary focus is to do what? Make money. Yes or no?
Sir, you...
Okay. No.
Statistics don't lie, but liars lie about statistics.
You can answer the question. I'll let you filibuster as much as you want, but listen to what I'm saying.
You're not filibustering. You're not addressing what racism has
been and is. You are twisting
the facts and making the people who are powerless on the ground, the racist over those who control the wealth. That doesn't make any sense what you're doing.
Warren, let me ask you a question. Regardless of who was giving loans out, whatever, there were people of every race getting loans during that subprime loan era. There were people getting loans from every race that have since then lost their homes. That wasn't a racial issue.
Right.
Where was the recruitment disproportionately done for the loans? What communities were they done in?
Warren, let me finish my point. You're not allowing me to finish my point. That is a financial inequality. It is a financial injustice. People wanted to buy homes. That's what they wanted to do. There was like this outrage of everybody had to have an $800,000 home that nobody could afford to even put furniture in. It was like the new pair of Nikes that just came out.
It was Negro reach.
I'm not even going to say that because
sure.
I worked for a home builder and I saw many. I worked for one of those home builders that was booming back in those days in 2002, 2001, 2003. I worked in that industry, okay? So we were giving loans, well, we weren't, but the banks were giving loans to people that we knew probably would not even be able to afford to continue to pay their mortgages after the fact, but they did it anyway. That was whoever was loaning them the money.
And why did they do it, like the guy said, to make a profit?
No, wrong.
So they made a profit off of the backs of poor people.
Warren,
you're missing.
It wasn't just black people that lost their homes. There were black,
Warren,
white, Latino, Asian.
Black people are disproportionately the victims. Now you're not telling the truth.
I am, Lauren. You have to listen to me. Hold on.
Do the statistics show blacks are the disproportionate victims of the subprime scam?
Warren, listen. I promise you. I will give you 2 minutes to make your claim after I make this point. I promise you. I will be quiet and I will let you speak. But I want you to hear one thing. I was trying to make a point earlier, and I just want you to hear me out, okay? If we know that the Community Reinvestment Act signed in December of 1999, a year before the end of President Clinton's presidency, right? Before his presidency is over, he signs the Community Reinvestment Act that tells banks that they want to get first-time buyers to buy a home, poor people, and impact people to get them in their first home, because he wants this to be his legacy as a president of the United States, that he got poor people into their first home. Now, listen, the banks go, if these people can't pay off these home loans, how are we supposed to make money off of them? And you are fairly making the argument that these are poor people who were set upon, who could not make these loan payments. And you're absolutely right about that. But the banks were forced to do it, or they would be deemed as racist, and they would lose business because of that bad press.
Well, so, hold up. Who forced the banks? Black people didn't force the banks to do that.
Sure, they did.
If assuming your logic is correct, Warren, it was still whites who did that. The point
Warren,
is, blacks were not in an institutional power position to manipulate this financial mess that took place.
Warren, it was a white man who implemented this liberal idea to get more blacks into their homes, even though they couldn't afford them. Do you understand that?
But the point is, you're missing the point. It was not blacks that did that. That's the point.
Oh, no. Actually, blacks are responsible, too. I'll explain to you why blacks are responsible there. And you may not like this, but guess what? Warren, if I steal a car from William and I drive over to your house and I say to you, hey, I just stole this car, Warren, from William, but I want to sell it to you and you know it's stolen and you buy it off me anyway and the cops pull you over, you're culpable because you knew it was stolen. And what these banks did to these black people was say, hey, listen, I know you don't make $80,000 a year, but we're going to say you did on this application. And blacks are not stupid. If you lied on that loan application, you are just as responsible as the subprime lender.
And guess what? That was only a small percentage of the subprime. Larger percentage were people who were persuaded by the banks to refinance on their homes.
You're talking about persuasion like black people are stupid.
It's not an issue of being stupid, but there is something being taken advantage of with language that people don't quite understand in a particular area of industry that other people have an advantage over you in. If you go to the doctor,
Warren,
the doctor gives you a diagnosis, you're not in a position to argue with the doctor what you have and don't have because you're not a doctor and don't know the terminology.
Warren, let me ask you a question. Why is it, as a black man, I'm going to ask you this, Warren, why is it that when a black person makes a mistake, he doesn't know any better? But when a white person makes a mistake, he's a villain. Tell me that. Because a black person making a mistake, you're telling me that he was taken advantage of. He automatically becomes a victim. It's not anybody's fault that the black man or the black woman doesn't read the fine print. It's their own fault.
It's an individual's fault.
Yes,
as an individual.
It's an individual's fault. It's not a black thing.
I'm of the Caucasian descent, but I personally myself have been duped out of things before because I didn't read the fine print.
But ladies and gentlemen, you're still missing the point.
Please make
the people that control these industries make the rules, create false. White people in the institution. Black people are not in the control of any institution that whites are relying on for the quality of their life.
So you're telling me, Warren, if I get this correct, you believe that whites and corporations are vicious, evil people who manipulate blacks who are uninformed, right, are uninformed and take advantage of them because they're less educated. Is that what you're telling me, sir?
No, what I'm telling you is that whites, to organize power, control and manipulate the rules and regulations that maintain advantage for their group over other groups, particularly black people.
And so they're using black people, the people who have no money, to make a profit.
That's the way it's been ever since blacks were brought in the country. That's been the game ever since.
So the whites are making profits off blacks who have no money?
Whites are making profit off blacks and other non-whites in all kind of ways in this country.
Warren, I'm white, and believe you me when I tell you this, my man, sir, I do apologize. Believe you me, I'm white, and I get taken advantage of by the white man every day. It's not a racist thing. It's a financial inequality. That's all it is. I live paycheck to paycheck. I work an honest job every day, but I live paycheck to paycheck like every other average Joe on this earth. I have, you know, I do have an apartment. I have a car. I do have car insurance. You know,
if you recognize that whites take advantage of other whites, then why do you waste your energy and time on black people who don't do the manipulation against you? Why do your energy
Warren,
don't go towards the white people?
Warren, I'm going to ask you a question, okay? If you're really, really this angered, I mean, we really, really want to talk about the plague on this country, okay? You think that whites have a position of power to take advantage of blacks, okay?
Whites are collectively have power over black people when it comes to resources, finances, wealth, commercial property. You don't think that? You don't think that the evidence shows that? That's the facts?
No. I believe, honest to God, this is what I believe, Warren, and you're going to hate this. I promise you, I know you're going to hate this, okay? The truth is that the modern-day African-American, or as Elijah Muhammad would say, the so-called Negro today, the so-called Negro, has decided that they no longer want to be a part of the mainstream, that they will willfully be ignorant, and they will willfully be uneducated, and they will not take the advantage of the opportunities of this great country and become a part of the strength of this nation that makes us all profitable. But I'm going to ask you this last question, Warren, because you live in New Orleans, you live in Louisiana, so I'm going to ask you this. I'll throw this at you. There is a large group of people within the African-American community who sell drugs, promote prostitution, and crime within those communities. Are you going to tell me that those people do not have an unfair advantage on the average African-American in those countries? And why aren't you as upset at them? Because those people, if there's anybody, the white man may be on the other side of the pearly gates, but if there's anyone that's effectively keeping blacks from even reaching the outside of those gates, are the gangs, the drug dealers, and the violent felons.
You're chopping up.
Okay, I'm saying is that if there's anyone that's keeping black people from at least leaving their neighborhoods and reaching those pearly gates of capitalism, is the plague of drugs and violence that are happening in their own communities by gangs and drug dealers and prostitute peddlers in their own communities. Now, why aren't you just as upset about those people as you're upset about white capitalists that won't give you and your black community an opportunity? Why?
Because I know that those people have no power and control the way the white people who control the flow of the drugs and control the decision in the criminal justice system do. And a perception and images that are projected about blacks in the media. That's why.
Well, make your last point. We're going to take a break. Warren, will you stick around with us for a little while? Mary,
sure,
let's ask
one
more question.
Warren, okay, I understand where you're coming from. The white man's bringing in the drugs. The white man's bringing in this. But it is those individuals, black, white, or Latino, or whatever you are, it is your decision to take that route in life or go another route. I understand that people come from impoverished backgrounds.
Well, what we're doing is we're kind of getting off the premise of what your show is supposed to be about.
Well,
and
no, we got plenty of
blacks are racist against whites. And I maintain that black people collectively as a group have no history in developing rules and regulations and policies that control and restrict the access to it for white people.
I think you're wrong, but you know what? That's what this show is about. It's about disagreeing. We're going to take a break when we come back. It's going to be the top of the hour. I've got more to talk about, but Warren, you're definitely welcome to stick around if you like.
Sure.
Thank you. All right, stick around, guys. This is the radio. Top of the hour coming up right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
How may I help you, my brother?
Look, I'm here because I can't stand what's happening in this community.
Yes?
Yeah, and somebody has to make a change.
Yes!
Now, brother, will you help me?
Yes, I will!
I wish I could. Damn it, man, I heard the People's Revolutionary Army was once 1,000 strong. Now, what happened?
They got government jobs. The brothers walked in with guns, came out with jobs. The brothers weren't mad anymore. Yes, Whitey. It's something else.
That one's for you there, Warren. Therese on the radio, 1 minute after the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is July the 10th, 2012. It is less than, I want to say, what, three hours. Before my son's birthday,
Caleb. So I wish you a happy birthday.
How many?
What, 3 hours?
3 hours before his birthday.
Yeah, his birthday's.
Oh, what am I thinking?
What
it's
are you
not
talking
tomorrow,
about?
It's
his
the 13th.
Birthday is Friday.
I know his birthday's Friday. What am I
Sorry,
thinking?
Caleb,
Sorry,
it's
Caleb.
It's Friday.
I know.
Friday the 13th.
That's right. I don't forget your birthday. I can't believe it. I thought it was tomorrow. Why am I thinking?
Today is July 10th.
Oh, damn, that was so horrible. Yeah.
That was horrible.
So, yeah.
Not 3 hours.
So, yeah, all right. So, 3 days before.
3 days and 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly. 3 days, 3 hours is what I should have said.
Or two
anyway.
Days and 3 hours.
But we'll celebrate his birthday on Friday. I'm going to do a Friday night dance party, especially for his birthday on Friday. So, please stay tuned for that right here at, I think we're going to run it off maybe about 9:45 Eastern Standard Time. So, I hope that you pay attention to that. It is three songs that I introduced to him for the first time that I loved and I know that he's a big fan of now. So we'll talk about that. We've got Warren on the line. He is he's on the line. Warren is out in Louisiana. And we're going to talk about this a little bit, Warren, because then I got so much stuff I have to get into. I have to get into Brad Pitt's mom. I have to get into Brad Pitt's mom, which is very,
I got
very
a question.
Important to get into. What's that? Go for it, JC.
Are we going to get into today Obama extending the Bush tax cuts?
Nobody cares.
No?
No, nobody cares. Nobody cares.
What is it?
He said he extended the Bush tax cuts. All he did was keep in the current tax rate. As they are,
except for
people making over
$250,000.
That's it. It's not even a story.
He would be on that list.
That's right. It's not even a story. But we move on. Let's get into this. I'll spend another five or 10 minutes in this because Mike in Florida is on the line, and I know he wants to get in. I can feel Mike's presence.
I can feel it burning.
Mike in Florida obviously wants to talk about what Warren in Louisiana is talking about. Mike, of course, as always, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys? You know, I'm listening to Brother Warren. You did call yourself Brother Warren, right, Warren?
Yes, he did. Yes, hold on. I didn't put him on the air. Hold on. I'll put him on right now. Warren?
Yes. So you refer yourself as Brother Warren?
Yes.
Now, what's the significance of this? Are you a Franciscan monk?
That's because I also have a Blog Talk Radio show, and that's my host name on my Blog Talk Radio
okay,
show.
Okay. So you're not like a black Muslim or anything, because we've had issues with those people on this show.
No, I'm not a Muslim, no.
Okay. Now, I sort of agree with you a bit about corporations and corporate power, okay? But what you're not realizing is that to the people who really run stuff, you know, the really powerful people, we're all niggers, okay? I'm a nigger, and I'm as lily white as anybody, okay? There's not racial discrimination. There's only class discrimination, and it's the rich against everybody else. Like the Occupy people say, that 1%, yeah, that 1%'s real. And it's they try to keep this racial divide between us so we don't march upon their mansions with pitchforks and torches, okay? The subprime mortgage problem, a lot of it was, you know, like you said, ignorant people getting swindled and duped, and then, you know, it's hard to swindle an honest person, okay? These people knew they were getting into homes they couldn't afford. But a lot of the stuff, the problem with the housing market happened at the hands of greedy people who figured they would stay in their home until their payments went up and they'd sell. They were trying to make a huge profit.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Mike. A lot of people bought homes thinking they could flip them.
Yeah. You know, it's going to have this massive increase at the five-year point, so I'll sell this house for double it 4 years from now and I'll make my money. But when everybody's trying to do that, you're screwed. And I saw a story about a young couple in Massachusetts who bought their starter home for $500,000. And they figured, oh, well, you know, before this balloon payment happens, we're going to flip it and get double our money. But you can't get $1 million for $500,000 house because there's only so many people that can afford to buy $1 million house.
Warren, you care to respond to that? I mean, do you agree or disagree with Mike?
To make you all aware of a website called timwise.org, TIMWISE.org. He's a white anti-racist activist. He has an article entitled The Color of Deception, Race Crime, and Sloppy Social Science. And he addresses the way you use the statistics about crime to try to prove some point that blacks are racist towards whites as it relates to crime. He addresses that very skillfully, tactfully, and with evidence and truth. And he looks at the source of the white nationalist who's using this approach that you guys are taking a cue from to do this. So that's timwise.org.
But how did we get on to this?
Because the topic on the show are blacks racist? I'm being consistent with the topic.
Well, no, I will tell you, I've been called white boy and cracker a whole lot more than I've ever called anybody nigger.
Well, okay, I'll take that personal experience in into consideration, Mike. But see, Warren, I think the argument here and what I'm saying is that here is James Earl Jones, who's clearly from the segregated South, who knows this topic. He says it himself. He is totally saying that here his grandmother, an American Indian and a black woman, who taught him to be racist.
Mm-hmm.
And my argument was whether or not it could be the truth. The statement can be made that indeed blacks could be racist against whites. You disagree with that, but James Earl Jones, I believe, who's older than me, and Warren, from what I can hear from your voice, appears to be older than you.
I would challenge James Earl Jones with his use of terminology. I would challenge him seriously on that, because the issue is his grandmother had no control over any whites, more likely his grandmother was a subject to the power and control of whites.
Well, you believe racism you believe racism is about control economically.
Black people,
only powerful people can be racist.
Let me finish my point. When black people over the centuries grieved about racism, it was because there was a material restriction and quality of life done to black people, not a mere attitude, but an attitude coupled with power and force to develop rules and regulations to make that attitude be realized and actualized in everyday life.
Okay, so how long does it take after the Civil Rights Act for this to be undone?
Well,
Let me make my point. It's not the white man who's making people pop out kids at 16 years old in the ghetto, unless you want to blame LBJ and his great society. It's not the white man who's telling kids to run around and not speak English with their pants hanging off their asses. It's not the white man who's telling them to name their kids DeAndre and Lavontius and Lavernius and all this crap that makes you not blend into society. So, you know, when are black
but assuming everything you said is true, how is that racist against white people?
Well, no. But I think Mike's making
that's
a broad
an issue.
Point.
I'm being consistent with the argument, people. I'm not going off the path because I can't handle the argument. You guys are going off the path.
Wait. He's making a legitimate Here's his argument. He's saying that what's going on in the black community, you're suggesting that it's a product of racism by white elitists and those in power. Excuse me. Is that what is the arbiter of black behavior within the black community?
You're getting choppy.
Okay, I'm sorry. What is the arbiter of the behavior within the black community that does the things that Mike just suggested? You know, the pants hanging off the ass, the denigration of women, the having children out of wedlock. Who is controlling that behavior within the black community that has plagued the black community more so than this imperialism or colonialism from white men?
Sir, I could deal with you on that, but that's not the issue you had on your web. We're looking at whether blacks are racist against white people.
Well,
Can black people be discriminatory? Huh?
Yeah, racism.
Can black people be discriminatory?
Yeah, it's about discrimination.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to make the power issue, then black people be discriminatory.
My question is, what institutions do blacks control that are having a negative impact on the quality of life of white people collectively as a group, such that you could
I'll tell you that the absolute failure of the black family unit and of black society in general denigrates the quality of life for everybody. There are no neighborhoods that are predominantly white in this country that people look at and say, oh, crap, I'm not going there. I might get shot. Do you argue?
Sir,
There are entire neighborhoods in this country, in every major city in this country, that are the bad neighborhood. And that's because they're run by and populated by wild, untamed black people. So, yes, black people do denigrate the quality of life for white people. Look at Detroit. Have you seen the city?
Hold on, you live in one
of the most dangerous cities in America, and it's not because of white.
Let me say this. So you're saying that black people's dysfunctions that you've identified exist, black people do them to discriminate against white people?
No, but I'm saying that the absolute failure of black America to integrate itself has denigrated the quality of life for all of us.
Let me jump in. Hold on, guys. You're saying that when black
people move into white neighborhoods and whites move out.
I got to pause you guys. Hold on. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Don't take it personal. I just want to pause you guys. Warren, I need you to hear this part. I need you to hear this real clear. Okay? This is a very important comment that's being made by Mike. The question is, and you're making this argument that blacks, the reason why that they're in this position is because of the imperialism or the colonialism of white men who have control, white people who have control. The question is that within the black communities, what is causing people in the black community to behave in the manner that they do? 450 shootings in Chicago in less than a calendar year, right? We're talking about shootings. We're talking about the behavior. We're talking about single-parent households, their behavior. Are you saying that their refusal to become a part of mainstream is a product of white America or is a product of black Americans refusing to be a part of the mainstream? Because nowadays, if you ask any black person, even Jesse Jackson said this, and I'll play the audio for you. When Jesse Jackson makes those comments about Barack Obama in his 2008 Father's Day speech, when Jesse Jackson says Barack Obama and this faith-based crap telling niggas how to live, when Barack Obama was telling black people that they need to be fathers to their children, they needed to be married and have a strong family structure, Jesse Jackson suggested that he wanted to cut his nuts off. We have audio here that I will play to you. I will play for you. Okay? I will play this audio for you, Warren. And I want you to hear it. This is a white woman saying that Mitt Romney should not talk to black people. Should not talk to black people about living in two-family households. I got to find this audio. So if you give me a second, I will find it. Because I want you to hear this. This is very important. Okay, so give me a second. I'm sorry. Let me just get to this thing. Hold on. Okay, how to talk to blacks. That's what this audio is called. Listen to what this woman says.
He's so condescending, talking to African Americans about how they need to raise their children in two-parent households. This is not the way in which you endear yourself to a minority.
This is not how you endear yourself to a minority. Mitt Romney telling black people that they need to live in two-family households. Here is a white man, a successful white man, saying that in order for you to be a successful person in this country, you have to have a strong family structure. And a white woman is saying how you endear yourself to blacks is you don't talk about that.
He's so condescending, talking to African Americans about how they need to raise their children in two-parent households. This is not the way in which you endear yourself to a minority.
Warren, I'll let you take the floor, and then I'll let Mike back in. Go ahead.
Okay, what I don't understand, sir, is why did you put on your show description this, when basically what you're doing is just venting stereotypes about blacks? You're not being consistent with the topic that you put on there, okay? The topic is, are blacks or minorities racist?
Sure they are.
And what you're doing, instead of addressing the point, you're going on the side of the road to talk about stereotypes of black people. Blacks do not molest white children. White men molest white children disproportionately more. Child pornography is done by white men. Okay, so I'm trying to figure out, you know, your dysfunctions you want to pretend like you don't have.
Well, Warren, as a white community.
You have methamphetamine labs all throughout rural America.
Warren, let me address what it is that you said. And let me make this abundantly clear. The subject matter was whether or not blacks could be racist.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always a deeper topic than that question. It's always deeper than that. We do not deal with topics in a myopic way. We deal with the structure of that argument. We deal with that argument, and when it flows in certain ways and it segues into certain conversation, it will segue into that. The subject matter is, hold on, let me finish. The subject matter is whether or not blacks can be racist. But there are many layers to that conversation, especially when we're dealing about race and racism. I don't know if you've listened to this show before, but on Reese on the Radio, we have a candid conversation about race. We are not afraid. And as a black man, I am not afraid to call black people to the carpet. I do not, I will put black people on blast just as I would do any other race, because I don't believe that any race is better than the other. And there are people out there, like yourself, who believe that blacks can't be racist, but we know that that is patently untrue.
There now, is no measurable, quantifiable measure of black people being racist towards whites, because there's no way you can show where whites' quality of life are impacted by organized decisions and rules and regulations that blacks put on whites.
Well, unfortunately, I have to disagree with you. I'm going to let someone else in on Warren. Will you stick around for a second? I'm going to bring in Edward
sure.
in Connecticut. Let's bring on Edward, and then we'll bring on Mike. Edward.
Hey, Reese, how you doing?
Always a pleasure to have you join us. What comment did you want to make, if any?
My first comment is, you know, when you are dealing with subjects like this, you have to understand the definitions. And this guy, Warren, the first problem he has, he doesn't understand the definition of racist or racism. There is nothing in the dictionary definition of the word that precludes black people from being racist. I mean, the definition is a person who believes in racism, or a person who believes that a particular race is inherently superior than another one. There's nothing in the definition that precludes that. And the definition he is trying to make doesn't exist. He's just making it up.
Yeah, but see, no, no, but Warren, and I'll let you respond, Warren, but what I believe that Warren thinks is that, as you just described, in the definition of racism, right, it says that, you know, one race of people or one person believes that his race is dominant or better than the other. Warren is of the like that believes that blacks do not believe that they're better than others, so they can't be racist, if he were to follow the definition, that blacks do not believe that they are inherently better than another race. They always believe that they are the victims of racism, because that would then determine that blacks are less than whites. Warren, correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, first I want to address the caller. The definition of racism I use is the responsible definition.
Well, hold on. You don't have your own definition of words. You can't make stuff up. This is what's in the dictionary, and that's what the definition is. You can't call it apple or orange.
The dictionary doesn't give the whole social context of how the word has been used and applied in society. Okay.
So, Warren, are you suggesting that racism now has a definition all its own based upon the race?
Well, I can't. You're chopping up there. I can't hear.
No, I'm saying, are you suggesting that race has a definition all its own, determined on the person's race? That
what I'm saying is that the issue of people being impacted by racism is very real. And it has been that those who are in power to enforce their beliefs about another group make the decisions racist against the other population. Okay, blacks could have said all they wanted to, that we're better than whites. The fact of the matter is, whites control all the institutions to decide their access to a quality of life in a society.
Edward, you want to go there, and I'll bring Mike in.
Well,
you.
See, the problem is, you know, when you're talking to certain people like this, if they don't understand the real definitions of words, you can't really have a coherent conversation, because his definition of racism is not one that exists in any book anywhere. This is just something that he's made up.
A person like you don't do any reading at all anyway. If you look at sociologists like Eduardo Bonilla Silva and Tim Wise, they would explain to you how racism has been in society.
How did you determine that I don't do any reading? Sorry? How would you come up with
that? How you determine that I don't know what racism is?
Warren,
okay, I will get to you that, because I went to the Webster's Dictionary and looked up the definition. That's how I know you don't know the definition of the word racism.
It's just like the color black. The color black has a certain way it's used to refer to a descriptive color.
Well, I'm not talking about the color black. I'm talking about the specific definition of the word racist or racism.
Warren, deal with the issue. As you've claimed so many times that we are going off the issue, I think the argument was that Edward made was the question of the word racist or racism. And he's dealing with that as based on its definition. And the definition
Definition that the gentleman uses, he cannot, there is no measure or quantifiable way to say that black
people
in society against another group of people.
Well, go ahead, Mike. ahead, Bob.
Are you serious with this? You're going to beat this thing into the ground. Racism, as per the dictionary, sir, is simply defined as hatred or intolerance of another race or other races. By your definition, if I walk through a neighborhood and some black guy kicks my ass while yelling, "Take that, white boy," I'm not the victim of a racist hate crime.
Well, first of all, the whites control the neighborhood.
Hold on. I want that answer addressed. Hold on. I'm putting everybody on hold. Warren, not another word until you address exactly what it is that Mike asked. If he's walking through a black neighborhood and black people beat him up and say, "Take that, white cracker," or white whatever they say, is he not a victim of a racist crime, yes or no?
He'll be a victim of a hate crime. Yes, he would be a victim of a hate crime, yes.
So it's a victim of racism.
He's a victim of a hate crime, but it is not a racism that is systematic that impacts white people collectively.
Warren, before we go to a break, please promote your show. When do you do your show? Because I got to listen to it.
My show is entitled New Orleans Wake Up. That's my / After the Block Talk Radio. I have 7 shows, and I interview different authors about different topics. You'll learn something when you listen to them.
So I would love to listen to your show. Now, can you take my email address, reeseontheradio@yahoo.com? You can find
it. Hold up a second. And I want you to go to timwise.org's webpage.
I want you to email me at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com.
Wait, spell it for me.
Oh, R-E-E-S-E on the radio
on
yahoo.com.
Wait. Fact, Reese on the radio.
At yahoo.com. I'm going to put you on hold with my producer, JC. He's going to give you all the information. I want you to give the information on my show because I want people to listen to your show.
Okay, sure.
All right? I want to get everybody who listens to my show to listen to your show. And then we'll come
back. I like that, man.
Hey, look, again, I don't care whether or not I disagree with you, Brother Warren. I don't care. The point is that you called on my show. You're giving me some love just by calling in. It doesn't matter whether you disagree, but I know Mike is about to lose it. So I'm going to put you on with the producer because we got plenty of stuff that we got to get into right now. We got some other stuff we have to get to. So I'll put you in the queue to get on with JC, and we'll get all of your information. All right? Hold on.
Sure.
Guys, we've got to take a break. Warren was great because when Mike gets that animated, when Mike in Florida gets that animated, you have no idea. Me, I swear to you, I'm sweating right now because I love it when Mike is one of my favorite people in the world. As well, actually, Edward and Mike, I love them when they call it because Edward is very, very subdued. He's a great monotone. Mike, on the other hand, is very animated. Mike is very consistent. That's what I love. Edward is very consistent. He gets his facts. I love him. He reminds me of myself back in my early Hot 97 days, getting those facts, getting that research. And when these guys are on the show, this is why I love them. This is why I love their support. I do anything to promote them. In fact, I'm going to promote them today. I want people on their Facebook pages. I want people on their Twitter pages, everything. In fact, you can just go to Reese on Radio, and you can find each and every one of them because they are there. We're going to take a break. Got so much stuff to get into. I knew this conversation was going to be. I knew it. I felt it. I felt it. In my heart of hearts, I felt it. That this was going to be one of those conversations. Race. It's Race on Reese on Radio. Every time. Right here on Blog Talk Radio. Stick around. We'll be back. We got to talk about Brad Pitt's mom.
what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we get in. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. It's going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we're going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
The adult beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, yes.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve, and it's called 211 for that matter, is that the police code, 211, means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how
you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, Reese, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. And the state of our union is strong.
3 years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz. There's Dr. Phil. There's Dr. Drew. There's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion. But I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem. You deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I-L-O-V-E.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Welcome back, Reese on the Radio. Hour right here on Block Talk Radio, July the 10th, 2012, on this terrible Tuesday. If there was only a day that began with the letter R, so then I can call it, like, you know, racist something. You know, like, you know, something like
racist
that.
Racist Ruse Day.
Yeah, something like that. If I can only do that. Anyway.
Well, it could be. It could be Racist Ruse Day.
Yeah, Racist Ruse Day.
Yeah.
Racist Ruse Day? I don't think anybody would take that seriously. You're crazy.
It's Racist Ruse Day on Reese on the Radio.
Yeah, but anytime. See, that was the thing, because we had so many topics that we had to talk about. I knew that once I brought up the whole James Earl Jones thing, that it was going to spark that kind of conversation. It was going to last an hour and a half. It's just one of those things. But Mike was getting a little heated. Mike was going after the guy.
I didn't hear whatever Mike said in the last part because I'm sorry I had to step out to take a very important phone call. But Mike, you are brilliant because what you said when you first came on, I mean, you're brilliant. I love it. You and Edward both never cease to amaze me. It's unbelievable. I love it.
Absolutely.
L-O-V-E-I-T it.
Okay. All right. Now, anybody who listened to the show yesterday, they know that I was talking about this whole Brad Pitt mom letter she wrote to the editor about supporting Mitt Romney. Now, and I went to this entire diatribe about Brad Pitt supporting gay marriage, but his mother does not. And they're, you know, they're two different people. And, you know, that happens, of course, you know. I'm a I'm a Met fan. You know, my kids are Yankees fans. You know, whatever. Fact of the matter is that nobody ever agrees with me. My brother, perfect example. I'm a Jet fan, although he watches Jet games. He's a Green Bay Packer fan, which I still can't understand, but I'm somewhat responsible for it. That's another thing. So most like usually, kids never agree with adults. They just don't. Their parents, they just never agree. They always go the opposite. So finding out that Brad Pitt's mom is against gay marriage and believes that marriage is between a man and a woman wasn't surprising to me. What I find scary is that now the guy who these people love, the gay community as it were, for his statements about gay marriage, these same people are making death threats to Brad Pitt's mother. They're going online saying, kill the bitch.
for her beliefs. Kill the bitch. But here's what I find more alarming. Is that there's been no word from Brad Pitt defending his mother. None. No statement from him. People haven't even gone to Brad Pitt and say, hey, your mom made some statements about gay marriage. Reports are calling her anti-gay. Yeah, that's right. They're calling her anti-gay for her statements. And, of course, the Twitterverse is out there calling for her death. So Matt Lauer of the Today Show is talking to Brad Pitt's brother. And he's the only person who stepped up to defend his mama. His brother, Doug. I don't want to refer to him as a nobody, but he's a nobody because he's just a regular dude. But he's stepping up. Here's what he said to Matt Lauer about the controversy concerning his mother.
Mom made some headlines recently with an op-ed she wrote and talking about politics and social issues. I don't want to get into what she wrote or what Brad's views are, but let's just say they are different.
They are different.
They disagree on a lot of key issues. Has that over the years created some interesting times at Thanksgiving dinner?
You know, I think moms and dads and kids agree to disagree all over the world. So why would our family be any different? And no, you know, there can be healthy discussion when people disagree with you, and I think there should be. You know, the bad thing is when it turns to venom and negativity, and we don't have that in our family. It's open discussion. We can learn from each other, and, you know, if anything, it solidifies your point, or maybe you learn something.
And just tell me, if we're going to put some information on our website.
So that's what his brother Doug had to say. His brother Doug. But did I or did I not predict this, Mary? Come on. Give me my props.
Predict what?
That his mother was going to deal with the vitriol of the gay mafia.
Oh, yes, definitely. But I'm not interested in what his brother has to say. I want to know what old bratty boy has to say.
I want to know, too.
Brad, I propose you this. Why have you not come out to protect your mother? Is Angelina discouraging you from that?
Wow.
Is your wife pulling the reins?
Wow.
What's the dealio, my man? Your mother got death threats. Your
Killed
wife loves the loves the gays. So we know you kind of love the gays, too. You donated $100,000 to the gays.
Did he?
To Prop 8.
That's right.
$100,000 donated.
That's right.
You and Angelina. That's chump change to you too, but
sure
whatever.
It sure it is.
But
you better believe Angelina wears the pants in that family.
Those gays that you love so much, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, those gays that you vow to protect and honor by not getting married until they could legally get married in this country.
They changed their mind about that though.
Yeah, whatever, it doesn't matter. Those same people are threatening your moms.
Yeah.
And you got to get hood on the show.
Yeah, I mean, look, I will ask the question, and it's a legitimate question. In a case like this, you know what? Oh, you know what we got to do? You know what we got to do? You know what we got to do? I know what we got
to
do.
Brad, are you willing to take a bullet?
No. Give me Montgomery.
And when I say bullet.
Give me Montgomery's, give me Montgomery's number.
I mean from the adult store.
Give me Montgomery's number. What's Montgomery's number?
I don't know.
Let's get Montgomery's number. JC, we got to call Montgomery. He is the quintessential mama's boy.
Yo,
you know where I'm going with this, Mary.
But you know Jamie Montgomery would be like, what?
No.
You don't talk about my
mama
like that.
No, we got to get JC. Give me the number.
I got it.
Okay, we got to get JC, James' number, and get him on the phone. But I got to ask, in a case like this, now think about it, okay? I understand their death threats, their idle threats. I understand that. But let's be truthful. Brad Pitt's going to have to come out with a statement. He's got to.
got to come out with a statement. Your wife and you have decided that you are standing for gay marriage. Mom comes out and puts this op-ed piece out, and now she's getting death threats. Now, do you pull an Angelina Jolie and start flipping on your papa, John Voight, like she did? Remember that? Remember that? Angelina Jolie went after her dad. She pretty much just wiped him off the map until they finally, you know, decided after the kids were born or the kids came into their lives. Or, you know, the
kids were born.
So they had one child.
But since the child was born and all the other ones,
When they picked up the kids at the airport. When they picked up their orphans at the airport. Whatever it was.
No good.
Bottom line is, he's not answering. Try his wife.
I don't know what his new number is. That's the problem.
I thought you had his new number.
No, I don't. Do you have it in yours?
I thought we had his new number. We have to get him on the phone because I want to hear.
I have Kelly's number.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's get that number and see if we can get her on the phone and get him on the phone. Now I'm telling you, folks, this is why James is perfect for this conversation.
Because James does everything for his mom.
Everything in the
because
world.
In the middle of, I don't know, something with his wife, and he would get up and
James,
go to his mama's aid.
Let me tell you something. James could be an astronaut on Mars. An astronaut on Mars.
Kelly.
He could be going out there discovering
Mary.
Life on Mars. And his mama would call, and he'd
your
hop back
Mary.
On the spaceship and land it right in front of his mama's house.
Can you tell him that?
Got to call that.
Listen, anybody like that would, Reese. My mom could slap the Pope, and I deny that she did it.
Your mom could do what?
Slap the crap out of the Pope, and I would deny that she did it.
I understand that.
She didn't put her hands on him.
I will bring the rest of the guys in, but come on, answer the question. If the real deal is this, it's your wife. You got 19 kids with this broad, 18 of them that you picked up at the airport. You got the Rainbow Coalition running in your backyard.
The rest of them they picked up at flea. The rest of them she picked up at flea markets around the world. But
your call cannot be completed.
So my question is, who do you pick? You pick Mama? Oh, you picked your wife.
Yeah, I know, but I thought he changed.
You pick your mom.
What's that?
You pick your mom.
You pick Mama?
Just tell him to call
in. Of course, you can find. Listen, you can get divorced and find another wife. You can't divorce your mom and find another mom.
Oh, really?
Really?
Okay, I'm going to bring Edward in on this one. Edward in Connecticut. Come on.
Bye.
Which one do you pick? Edward, I know I have a strange feeling. You seem like this type. You're going to defend Mama over your wife.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to defend my mother, but I'm not too familiar with his mother. You know, it could be that maybe she's not all there. I don't know how old she is or anything, but...
No. She is all there. She's not old. She's not, like, decrepit or anything
that.
She's just a devout Christian.
Yes, that's the point. She's a devout Christian. And what she was talking about, Christian values, and she was saying that Romney, as a Mormon, still values family and family values. So in this case, I think that Brad Pitt has got, I mean, he's kind of between a rock and a hard place. Because sure, you don't want to support your wife and the views that you've either adopted or you've co-signed with your wife, but your mom's getting death threats, and you're in the public eye.
You know, I think that most likely it is Angelina controlling that family, and... you know, she has been in a lesbian relationship at one point.
Right.
I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
So, you know, he can't really come out too, you know, strongly against his mother. And he may be just hoping this whole thing will blow over so he doesn't have to get in it and then, you know, make it even more of a firestorm than it already is.
Well, as long as I'm around, it's not going to be over because I want to hear what he got to say. And I want to hear what Angelina got to say because she ought to come out too and be like, yo, check this out. I was down with y'all. But now you didn't threaten my mother-in-law. This is a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the woman has the right to her own opinion, her own political stand. There's no reason. Now, if they wanted to, you know, write an article or what,
you know. To bash her.
To not bash her, but to debate what her opinion was or to state that they don't believe what her, in her opinion, that's fine. We're all entitled to our own opinion, our own belief. So there's no reason why now all of a sudden, I mean, you're spewing the same rhetoric that you don't want people spewing at you. You're spewing at other people.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you should say something because being silent.
Wasn't he married to Billy Bob Thornton at one point?
Yes, he was married to Billy Bob Thornton once.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't he at one point like have relations with his dog or something?
Yes, he did when he was 17. But that's not about this. She's married to Brad Pitt.
She was going through a phase.
No, that was him going through a phase.
You guys are looking a long way.
Go ahead. I want to hear from Mike. Hold on. I want to hear from Mike.
Okay. You guys are looking at this the wrong way. It's not a question of do you choose your wife over your mother. It's do you choose your mother over your ability to ever work in Hollywood again?
That is an interesting way to look, man.
There are two groups in Hollywood who run shit, okay? There are two powerful mafias in Hollywood. The number one most powerful people in Hollywood are Jewish people. And if you don't believe it, ask Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson was one of the biggest stars
in the world, and he's done now. His movies don't even get released in the theaters, and his movies made $2.5 billion in the U.S. alone. If Brad Pitt is seen as being any way connected to not towing the party line vis-a-vis gay marriage, he's done, because Brad Pitt is not as big a star as Mel Gibson, and they threw Mel Gibson's ass under the bus.
I will agree with you. I will agree with you there.
I think it's a little different. Mel Gibson's situation is a little different. But, you know.
Mel Gibson made a movie that directly translated the Bible accurately, and they hated him. And he asked one cop if he was a Jew, and Mel Gibson never worked again. If Brad Pitt is seen as questioning gay marriage, they'll never cast him again, because all the casting directors in Hollywood are gay.
Gay marriage is not what Brad Pitt needs to do, though. He needs to come out and be like, check this out. I'm on your side or whatever, but you're not going
to
be sitting around
threatening
my mama. This is my mama. I support you. I gave my hard-earned money to you. You are definitely not going to sit around here and think I'm going to give you any more money or any more support, and you threatening my mama. Because he has enough money. He doesn't need to make any more money. Him and Angelina Jolie have plenty of money to live very well and very comfortably for the rest of their lives, including their kids' lives.
Let's get to James, because this is I'm sorry. James is going to be mad that I'm calling him a mama's boy, because he is. I'm sorry. It's a fact. He's on the phone right now seething that I said.
He likes being a mama's boy.
But I'm going to ask him that if he and his wife, they both, I'm putting James Montgomery, Kool-Aid man. You know why we call him Kool-Aid man, because he drinks the Kool-Aid all day, every day. Usually in the form of 211.
I hope he's been drinking some Kool-Aid today.
But the bottom line is that James, and I'm going to pose the question to you, James, and I'll put you on. I'm going to pose the question to you. You are Brad Pitt. You and Angelina Jolie have decided that you support gay marriage. You publicly announced it. First you said that you're not going to get married until all people, gay or straight, can get married. Then you decide for your kids that you're going to get married anyway because your kids want you to be mommy and daddy. Then your mom writes an op-ed piece in a local newspaper who says that she believes in Christian values and that man is between a man and a woman. And the anti-Christian gay mafia comes out there and starts death-threatening your mama. How do you respond publicly? James, you're on.
Nobody. Nobody, nobody threatens my mama. And I don't know why you said I would hate being called a mama's boy. I've called myself a mama's boy.
Oh, I think we may be having some technical difficulties.
James, what's wrong with your phone? I want to hear the end of that. Nobody what?
Nobody threatens my mama.
He must have got so heated, he burned up his cell phone.
Hello?
Come on, James, where are you?
I can hear him.
He said nobody threatens his mama.
Oh, okay, my volume was off. So nobody threatens your mama?
Nobody threatens my mama. No. St. Michael better step aside if he ever threatens my mama. There's just no way. No way
Preach.
In heaven or hell that anyone is going to threaten my mama, and I'm just going to stand around and say, oh, well, you know.
I got to make some money, mama, so I can't say nothing about it. You got to understand,
You know what? I just heard what Mike was saying, but that's still Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt is a little more relevant than Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson was on his way out anyway. All right?
When Mel Gibson got sent out to the farm, he'd had a movie that grossed $1 billion.
He sure enough did. Passion of the Christ.
Passion of the Christ did $1 billion worldwide between international box office, DVD sales, and all
that. Sure.
Think
of the subject material.
He made $1 billion.
Exactly. It was going to inflame anyone. And half the reason that movie did so well is because it got so hyped. It was so hated before it even came out, you couldn't help but go see it.
Well, I agree.
What got me was watching people cry during the movie. I was like, haven't you guys read the book? You know how it's going to end.
That's what I said about the Titanic.
Hey, listen, Brad Pitt can go sell, he can go sell yogurt in Japan.
That's right.
And still make money.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, I saw Mel Gibson's last movie called Get Gringo, and I had to get it video on demand because no theaters will distribute it. He's still paying for that shit. What, 8 years later?
Yeah, they're going to be selling it at Comic-Con.
He's done.
Look at Michael Richards.
But the gay community has not – you can't give credit to the gay community solely for Brad or Angelina Jolie's success. I mean, you can't because
– If you listen to what John Travolta said, he said the way you get successful in Hollywood as a young actor – is by taking care of homosexual movie producers.
Wow.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And the way that you don't make it is asking homosexual massage therapists to take care of you.
Yeah.
Well, straight. I thought he was straight.
No,
John Travolta lately. I mean, have you seen him lately?
Straight to the next flame.
You see how pretty Brad Pitt was when he did Thelma and Louise? Come on, man. They were hitting on him nonstop.
But wait a minute. Okay, so, James, you're saying that you would defy your wife's ideology to defend your mother?
No. I don't have to defy my own ideology or my wife's ideology or mine to defend my mother. The fact of the matter is we live in a country where she can have her opinion. I may not agree with it, but she's going to have her opinion. And I don't care what she says, you're not going to give her the death threat. That's just, no. I don't care. You're not going to give her a death threat, and I'm just going to stand there.
Yeah, he could say, you know, that's the part that I'm troubled by, is that he didn't go out there and say, listen, my mom may not agree with you, but you don't threaten my mom. You just don't.
Well, you know, that's the new liberal mantra. It's very Orwellian / Nazi. You know, intolerance will not be tolerated.
Well, but the sad part about this is that, remember, if you're gay in this country, what's supposed to be believed in this country is that gays are tolerant. It's always to be believed that if you're gay, you're tolerant. Here is a woman who's opposed to homosexuality, and the intolerance shows. In death threats.
They're not. You know what gay people's derogatory term for straight people is, by the way?
Breeders.
Breeders. How tolerant is that? That's not tolerant.
Is it really?
Yep.
A breeder is something you call like a prize cow.
They call us breeders?
They call us breeders.
Mm-hmm. You know why they call us breeders? You know why they call us breeders? Because they're jealous because they can't breed, naturally.
That sounds like a horror film starring Roddy Piper.
Hey, Roddy Piper was in one of the greatest movies of all time, sir. You know what I'm talking about.
They live.
Frog
they live.
The hell?
Frog
live. Comes to
Frogtown. Hell Comes to Frogtown was pretty good, too.
Hell Comes
to
Frogtown,
but
there it is.
But They Live is genius.
Is it
awesome. Really?
Isn't
the best.
Wait a minute,
it was the best.
Isn't
very prophetic
David
for our times.
Isn't Keith David in that movie, They Live?
Yeah, they have the really long fight that lasted like 5 minutes. Put on the damn glasses.
In the alley.
Yeah, in the alley.
Yeah, over the glasses, yeah.
I'll never forget that. I love Keith David.
Didn't do well at the box office, though, but it was an awesome movie.
Oh, yeah, I think it did really well, like on video.
They Live was a great film. Okay, I had to bring James on because I wanted to know what a true mama's boy would say. But
that's right. And why would you think I'd be upset? I tell people myself I'm a mama's boy. I'm damn proud of it.
You know what, James?
I'm proud of you too, James.
I said he's proud to be a mama's boy. That's what he is. He knows what he is. I know. We all know what you all boo. It's okay.
Listen, you only get one.
I tell women and I tell like my nieces and everything, if you want to know how a man is going to treat you, watch how he treats his mother. Because if he can't respect his mother, there's no way in hell he's going to respect you.
That's the honest truth.
You got that right. Hey, I want to apologize for my freak out early when I was dealing with the dude from New Orleans. Hope I didn't blow anybody's eardrums out.
Oh, no. I loved it.
Listen.
Go ahead, JC.
Yeah? Hello?
Yeah, JC, you there?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
I thought you wanted to say something.
I said if he treats you like a princess, he was raised by a queen.
Oh.
That's nice.
That's so gay.
and so typical of JC.
And wait till you want your movie role, Missy.
Excuse me?
I see too. You never make it to Hollywood.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's it for us tonight. For JC the producer, James the Kool-Aid man, Mike our fellow Florida white man, and Edward in Connecticut, Maurice on the radio. I'm Mary Mary. While you bugging, have a good night. On a hump day tomorrow.
Peace.